Good afternoon. Today's one of those days I feel like I'm talking too much, but you know, I don't know, you're the ones who would know. Just from over here. So I'm planning to keep this shorter than I might otherwise, since that's what I'm feeling. And see how it goes. By the way, I did want to mention, you know, I do record a lot of these things, and if any of you are interested, you can email me. There is a handout. You're welcome to take one. There's a pile over on this side, and there's a pile over on this side. There's a couple short Rumi poems, and there's also contact information on the back side. Some of you have signed up on the email list, and that list is over on this side if you want to sign up and haven't. But anyway, you can, if you email me and you say you'd like a copy of the talks, I'll put them on Dropbox and then send you an invitation. That will be available probably if you're interested. And if we don't run out of battery. And also, somewhat in that vein, I'm very pleased, you know, one of my students, Danny, who lives in Florida, after writing 5 books about the Second World War, of all things, he works in the field of building energy-efficient houses and teaches PG&E how to do it. And he's written 5 books about the Second World War. And so after 20 years of that, he said, Ed, I've spent 20 years on the Second World War. That's enough. My next book is going to be a book of your lectures. So here he is, you know, with a more or less full-time job, a father, you know, a husband, and writing 5 books, and then he listened to like 300 of my talks, and then picked out ones to transcribe and edit, he and one of his students. So just yesterday we got the galleys, so it's very exciting. I didn't have to do hardly anything, and a book of my lectures. Huh?
You already did it.
I did the talk, so. It's amazing how things happen sometimes. I don't know how these things happen. I feel very grateful to Danny and to that people are interested in what I have to say. So this afternoon, I'd like to start by telling you a story that is, actually it's a story in my book, No Recipe, and that, by the way, there are a few copies over here if you want to get them from me. When I first started cooking, I was 21 years old, and I started working as a dishwasher and at Tassajara. The last year it was a resort. I had been practicing Zen for a year, and then I got a job at Tassajara. And the cooks were making really great bread, so I asked them if they'd teach me, and they said, sure. So then I was the dishwasher, the pot scrubber, and the baker. And halfway through that summer, one of the cooks quit, so the owners, Bob and Anna Beck, said, why don't you cook? And I said, oh, okay. And within a day or two, I realized I had cook's temperament. As the dishwasher, I was calm and tranquil and, you know, just baked and did my work and took long breaks in the afternoon. And then suddenly I was screaming at people. So, and they had to have meetings, you know, what are we going to do about Ed? And basically the answer is to say to me, Do you want to change the way you're working and how you know do this, or would you like another job? If you're famous enough and high-powered enough, you can be temperamental too, and they let you do it. because you're such a genius. But I was the new boy in the kitchen, so and not considered much of a genius, so I didn't have any slack that way. So I've studied since then, you know, Cook's temperament. So I can tell you a lot about that. But that's not the subject of today's talk. I want to tell you about when I tried out making biscuits. The biscuits just didn't come out right. So I thought, well, maybe it's because these biscuits are made with milk, with milk. And I thought, well, maybe I'll make them with water. And they still didn't come out right. And I thought, well, maybe it's the eggs. Maybe I should try making the biscuits without the eggs. And they didn't come out right. And then I thought, well, maybe it's the butter, and I maybe just should use some Crisco, and maybe the biscuits will come out the way they should. And they still didn't come out right. So I think it was at least three times, maybe four. And finally, it occurred to me, right compared to what? How's your life going? Is it coming out right? Compared to what picture, Compared to what image, of how your life should be. And I realized, oh my, I grew up with Pillsbury and Bisquick, and my biscuits don't taste like either Pillsbury or Bisquick. And this is the same with the pictures of our life. You know, we get these pictures when we're anywhere from, 2 months to, 5 years maybe, of, what we need to be doing so that our life comes out right. I don't know, occasionally there's pictures that come up a little bit later, but, our pictures are pretty old about the kind of life. And how do we, get to be more like the picture we have, that's the way that, biscuits should come out, the way my life should come out? You know, with Bisquick, you took the powder from the box and you put it in the bowl and you mix in milk with a fork, and then you took your fork and you just went flop, flop. You take some of the batter and whap it onto the baking pan. You didn't need any butter on your baking pan, you just baked them. And then the biscuit, the Pillsbury, of course, you wrap the can on the corner of the counter, twisted it open, took out the biscuits. And my biscuits didn't taste like Pillsbury or Bisquick. What can you do? So I thought, why don't I set aside the pictures I have of how biscuits should come out from a long time ago. These are outdated pictures. And why don't I taste the biscuits of today? Why don't I make these biscuits and see what these biscuits taste like without comparing to any picture? And they were magnificent. They were flaky and they were very high, and you could open them up without a knife. And then you could put butter in there. They're very hot, and you could put even more butter in than there was butter in the biscuit. And they were flaky. They were light. They melted in your mouth. They were heavenly. They were sunny. They were made with whole wheat flour. They were earthy. They were wheaty. They were so magnificent, and it was awesome. The biscuits of today. So we have this kind of, any time you can stop and taste the biscuits of today. And when we sit here, with meditation, how are the biscuits today? And the interesting thing, of course, is they're so much better when you're not comparing to some outdated picture of what you were aiming for, or what, meditation should be, or what my life was going to be, and, the kind of recognition I would get, or the kind of approval or respect. Or and when you, the more you can just simply see what your experience is, we're each of us, a human being. We're just people. Nothing special. And yet, we're also, just people also means just spirit, just soul. And you know, it may not look like much on Facebook. It's gotten, you know, so bad now that sometimes apparently teenagers are committing suicide because their picture of themselves on Facebook does not measure up to other people's pictures of themselves. I don't know, I'm refusing to go on Facebook. I know my partner Margo's on Facebook, and I talked to my friend John the other day. John Simpkins lives in Andrews, Oregon. He's the one resident of Andrews, Oregon. He lives in an abandoned schoolhouse. He lives in the, it's not the parsonage, it's the teacherage. And then in the schoolhouse he paints. So his paintings are 8x8 or, you know, whatever. And they're stunning images that I would never think of or anything. And he's got a show coming up in November in Bend, Oregon. But he said, Ed, I've got 3,000 friends on Facebook now. That's his social life. He lives by himself. He has a poodle.
Ella.
Huh?
Ella.
Is Ella the new poodle?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. He did a beautiful... You saw the other book of his first... His other poodle. Yeah.
Phoebe.
He had a... Huh?
Phoebe.
Phoebe? Phoebe, yeah. Phoebe was the... his poodle died and he was completely bereft for weeks, and then he finally got another poodle. He thought when the first poodle died, Phoebe, that... And he did a book about Phoebe and me. Mm-hmm. It's such a sweet book, you know, about how much you can love a dog and how much a dog can love you. And in the middle of the Andrews Desert, in the middle of the whatever desert it is where Andrews, Oregon is, it's, you know. And near his house there's a playa that goes on for miles. And when we visited, every so often he'd just go like... And he'd look outside, and then it would just be this spectacular light or something, and he'd go running out with his camera. And so, in some ways, you know, okay, that's a picture of a life. You know, he does paintings. But on the other hand, he's just another person, and doing the best he can, and drinking espressos. He gets most of his food and stuff from a UPS or Federal Express, FedEx. Because it's, you know, it's a long ways to the grocery store. About every 2 hours a car drives by. Out on the road. So when we, you know, can allow it, you know, we can receive support, we can receive warmth, love. We can sit here, Suzuki Roshi called, you know, in Zen we have more the terminology of big mind. We sit in big mind. And big mind, he said, is always on your side. And big mind is distinguished from monkey mind. Monkey mind runs around, you know, trying to get this and not get that and get out of this. And he said, you know, it's not the point. And when monkey mind is quiet, then big mind resumes itself. Then big mind is more obvious. But big mind is not coming or going. So we sit, this is like the Rumi poem I told you at some point today. You know, this we have now is not imagination, not a grief or a joy. This is not a judging state, not a sorrow or an elation. Those come and go. This is the presence that doesn't. When grapes turn to wine, they're wanting this. What else could human beings want? The night sky is nothing but a crowd of beggars swirling past, and they all want some of this. This we have now. This we have now created the world and our bodies. Not that our bodies and the world created this. So some sense of sitting in this big space. So, you know, most of the time we're creating little projects like making biscuits. I will quiet my mind. I will stop my thinking. I will become calm. I will do this. I will do that. And we create little, little projects. And of course, nowadays, it's important to keep up on your email and your Facebook. And it gives you something to do to pass the time and to be moderately productive. So it's not so often that we have this kind of occasion to sit and just and not have any devices and not have any projects. Or, you know, we have projects that we realize after a while aren't so important after all. And we could just sit here with a human being, with a good-hearted, tender-hearted person that we are. See how we're doing. See what's happening. Again, as the Derek Walcott poem says, one day you will greet yourself arriving at your own door, in your own mirror. Each will smile at the other's greeting, saying, sit here, eat. You will love again the stranger who was yourself. Give wine, give bread, give back your heart to itself, to the stranger who's loved you all your life, whom you ignored for another, who knows you by heart. So it's not so often we just sit and we, you know, you can actually taste the moment today, the biscuits of today, your life of this moment, without comparing so much to what it should look like on Facebook or wherever it is or in your mind, without much comparison and just... being friends with yourself, finally. Being kind and tender and tender-hearted, gentle with yourself. In some ways, my favorite story about this is when we were at Tassajara and we had tea with Suzuki Roshi. And after we had our tea, it's quiet and the tea is served. And then in Zen, you pick it up with two hands, the tea. You always have one hand underneath the cup, one hand on top of the cup, and then, because two hands, you put two hands on one object, it focuses your attention. It's not like a cocktail party, you know, like, oh yes, and then we just got back from Greece. And your wine glass waves around, you know, and here it is. And you honor it, and you just sip your tea. And Roshi said then after a little bit, does anybody have any questions? And right away someone said, Roshi, why haven't you enlightened me yet? And I thought, that's not a very respectful kind of question to ask. It's a little bit like saying, "What, you know, are you really a Zen teacher? I mean, do you not have any skill? Do you not have any capacity to do this? What's your problem?" And why are you, are you holding out on me? I mean, what's the deal? Anyway, he said, I'm making my best effort. It was so sweet. I'm making my best effort. And over the years, I think about this story, it comes back to me, and you know, because sometimes I would be sitting and I'd think, why can't I have a better experience? Why can't I have something more enlightening? And you know, I'm kind of, you start demanding of your own body, your own mind, come up with something better for me. And if you listen carefully, and you know, it's your taste in this moment, and not just busy telling your body mind what it needs to do to make you happy, supposedly, you know, you hear your body, your mind, your being saying, I'm making my best effort. I give you things to see, things to smell, things to taste, things to touch. I give you thoughts to think. I give you feelings to feel. Hey, I'm making my best effort. And what were you looking for? You know, what old biscuits did you have in mind? So our body, our being is very faithful, you know, very true this way, always making its best effort. And then, you know, we have various habits. Sometimes, you know, we're more like shaming yourself. You know, we say to ourself, is that the best you can do? You know, we're pretty hard on ourselves sometimes. So it's not that, you know, how do we get more out of ourselves, but how do we stop, you know, demeaning ourselves that way? How do we stop talking to ourselves like that? And start saying, you know, thank you for your effort. Thank you for doing your best. Thank you for, you know, giving me things to see and smell and taste and touch. Thank you for giving me things to think. Another example of this, one of my favorite Zen poems is a poem by Hakuin, who was, you know, quite a well-known Zen teacher in Japan in the 16th century, I think. Considered to be the most famous of the last 500 years in Japan, and you know, six major enlightenments and 18 minor ones. And but who's counting? Why don't I get any of those? Couldn't you share some? anyway, he wrote a poem one time that said, the demon outside pushes at the door, the demon inside holds it fast. They struggle fiercely all through the day, sweat pouring from head to toe. They battle on all through the night until at last, in the morning light, laughter fills the air. They were friends from the start. Unfortunately, sometimes that battle through the night is about 10 years or 20 or 40 before we realize, oh, we've always been friends. You know, we don't need to try to get ourselves to perform better. We're learning how to be supportive and listening to ourselves and receiving ourselves at our own door in our own mirror. Tender-hearted feeling for yourself. So, one last story. I mentioned Danny early on, and Danny one year went to a sesshin in Berkeley, you know, hours and hours of sitting every day at the Berkeley Zen Center. And it's the big sesshin, it's the first week of December, Rohatsu Sesshin it's called. And he said, Ed, it never got easier. Oftentimes in sesshin, you know, the third or fourth day, it kind of gets as bad as it kind of gets, and then it gets better and better, and you know, and you kind of just breeze through the last few days. Your body and everything has gotten used to sitting and whatever. And he said, it never got any easier. But I realized I could be kind to myself, and I could be tender, and I could be gentle and I could be, you know, compassionate with myself in the midst of all this difficulty. So big shift from, you know, can't you just do things this to so that, you know, I have a good time in my, can't, to your knees, to your body, you know, stop it, stop hurting, stop that. Be, you know, instead, you know, having some kind, tender feeling. Sweetheart, it hurts, doesn't it? Yeah. That's too bad. And I'm going to sit here with you. And I'm not going to abandon you. I'm not going anywhere while you're in this pain. I'm not going to go anyplace. I'm going to sit here with you. I'm going to be with the pain you have. And you start, you know, this is not abandoning yourself. You're going to be with yourself through the difficulty and through the pain with some gentle, kind feeling. And, you know, a lot of our life, it's not about a better performance. It's just learning to be kind and sweet with ourselves. Because it's hard. This life is difficult. And as you know, it may get more so. We don't know. Okay, thank you.